Budget Division. I'm your vice chair, and I'll be filling in for just a minute until the chairman gets back. Today, we will continue our Department of Natural Resources budget overview, and I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Bob Meyer, and I'll let you introduce your colleagues and start from there.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. You'll see on your agenda today, we do want to talk about the Fish and Wildlife Division, Forestry, Waters, our Office of Management and Budget Services Division, and then also, if time allows, we can do the wrap-up and not have to meet tomorrow, but I don't know if we'll get there or not. So we're going to try to go through some of this information rather quickly. A lot of the outcomes and priority measure slides many members have seen before. I'll be meeting with members individually as well to talk about some of those key outcomes that we deal with, and then spend the bulk of the time talking about the change items with the division directors and myself. So with that, I'd like to turn over the presentation of Fish and Wildlife to Director Dave Shad. And you'll have before you each presentation by division. What we're looking at, the one for today, for first of all, it says budgeting for results, DNR, Fish and Wildlife. I probably should have color-coded these somehow, but hopefully everybody has that in front of them. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dave Shad.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is, for the record, Dave Shad. I'm director of the DNR Fish and Wildlife Division. I thought I could quickly go through. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thought I could quickly go through a brief overview of our budget, talk a little bit about some of our core functions and important activities, and then we'll turn it over to Bob for a discussion of our initiatives. Slide number two, the pie chart, actually says a lot about obviously how we're funded, but also the kind of work we do. Three-quarters of our funding for our division is generated from the Game and Fish Fund. We get very little general fund, only about $5 million, a very small percentage of our overall funding. We do have almost $16 million of general fund that is appropriated to our division, but more or less just passes through our hands and goes to the bands for treaty payments. Beyond that, our general fund funding is a really small proportion of our overall budget. And that dependence on the Game and Fish Fund kind of drives our mission. Our focus is on managing fish and wildlife species and hunting, trapping, and angling opportunities for the license buyers, the license buying public, who are funding the largest share of our budget there. I should also point out that within that Game and Fish Fund appropriation, there are a number of dedicated accounts. These are the accounts that are generated by special stamps and surcharges, the pheasant stamp, for example. And those dedicated accounts have specific statutory language that direct the activities that they can be spent for. We also have a budget oversight committee that we work with very closely. That oversight committee and that process is set up in statute to ensure that the spending from that Game and Fish Fund and from those dedicated accounts is consistent with legislative intent and with stakeholder and license buyer expectations. And I'm sure you'll hear more about that budget oversight committee process in the future. The next slide is a brief description of our core functions, sort of what we do as a division. First and foremost, we conserve and restore habitats and populations, again with a focus on those species that are hunted, trapped, and fished for. But as we manage those habitats, there's benefits for many other species as well. Supporting hunting, trapping, and angling recreational opportunities is another important aspect of our work. We do a lot of inventory work, a lot of monitoring of both fish and wildlife populations and of the quality and quantity of habitat out there so that we've got the information we need in order to really effectively manage those populations. We have a pretty ambitious and fish stocking program, one of the more ambitious programs nationwide. We've put a large number of anglers out in the field each year, and we manage our fisheries pretty intensively as a result, and that stocking program is a really important part of that. Finally, we provide technical assistance to both other agencies to ensure that their programs reflect and support fish and wildlife habitats, and to private landowners who wish to enhance habitats on their lands. There is one core function that's missing from this slide that I wanted to mention. Our division also oversees and manages our licensing center. And so all the licenses that are issued for the department, not only game and fish licenses, but snowmobile permits and ATV registrations and that kind of thing, are run through that licensing center.
Mr. Chairman.
As far as some...
excuse me.
Yes.
Director, Senator Perizzo has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shad, how do you determine the number you have here on slide number 3, that 2.2 million wildlife viewers? How do you come to that conclusion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perizzo, there's actually... it's done through survey work, basically. The federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, generates some of that information. We've done some survey work of our own to try to develop that information also. And finding that actually that's a larger economic driver here in Minnesota than either hunting or fishing, and getting larger all the time.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Shad, there aren't any licenses involved in the viewers, are there? I can't remember that any that would fit in that category if I thought of it myself, but how do you determine that that it therefore has a higher economic base?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perizzo, I'm not real certain about the survey mechanisms they use. You're right. They wouldn't have a pool of licensed buyers to survey for that information. It would have to be some more general survey, a public survey, maybe of voters or something like that. But I'm not real sure how that information is derived.
Talking about census figures?
Yeah, it's apparently a national survey based on information from the Census Bureau. I think that might be the pool of individuals that they survey.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Chair.
Moving to slide 4, some of our priority outcomes and activities. One of our most important here is to provide hunting, angling, and trapping recreational opportunities. We do this by managing lands and waters, lakes and rivers. We've got one of the largest wildlife management area programs of any in the country, and manage a large number of species for hunting and fishing opportunity. And you can see there the $2.2 billion in expenditures for hunting and fishing. That's a huge economic driver in the state, and much of that is focused out in rural areas where a lot of those activities are taking place.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator
Mr. Erickson. Chad, I'm just curious. WMAs, it says you have them. In 86 of the 87 counties, we're sort of guessing that Ramsey County is the one county that does not have a WMA. Are we close?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, I believe you're right. It is Ramsey County.
They need to annex the property.
Senator Chair, Frederickson.
And the chair of this committee is from Ramsey County, mm-hmm. And she doesn't have a WMA.
Well, Senator Frederickson, maybe we ought to be working on the river there. I think there's got to be some places on the river that but have some, potential.
Some duck habitat, maybe?
Duck habitat. Go ahead, Director Chad.
Change your ordinances, too, then, if you want to have a WMA.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Ramsey County is kind of an expensive place for us to buy land, I think. So. Going on to slide 5. Kind of a related outcome or activity is supporting healthy fish and wildlife habitats and populations. on the left here is an example of the range for turkeys and wild turkeys and how that's expanded since the early years. In southeastern Minnesota, through our trap and transplant program, we've relocated turkeys to suitable habitats elsewhere in the state, and you can see how that range has expanded to the north and west. On the right is a corresponding table that shows increases in both the number of permits that are available to turkey hunters, which is a reflection of the recreational opportunity that we're able to provide, and the shorter bars there show harvest. We have similar indicators or measures, 25 of them altogether, in our conservation agenda, everything from walleye stocking to wild rice management, from duck harvest to hunter and angler satisfaction. And so this kind of broad range of measures of habitat and population health are very important drivers of our work. Moving on to slide six, it's another example of a population outcome. In this case, the recovery of the Red Lake fishery. I'm sure you're all aware of that pretty remarkable recovery from a fishery that was decimated from commercial harvest back in the 90s. We've worked very closely with the Red Lake Band to restock the lake, to incorporate new monitoring and assessment programs, to develop protocols to determine safe harvest levels for walleye, and from there develop regulations. And last year we were able to reopen the lake for walleye fishing. We have similar programs in place as far as monitoring and assessment, development of management plans, that sort of thing, for all of our large walleye lakes, and in fact many of the lakes that that we provide fishing opportunity on across the state. Finally, on slide seven, two additional activities or measures. One is to provide research, monitoring, and other activities that we need to generate the information that we use to manage these habitats and populations. We're a science-based organization. We try to get the best information available in the hands of our managers so that they can. Manage as appropriate. The example here is the testing, the surveillance that we're doing for chronic wasting disease, which is a very important health consideration for our deer herd, and we'll talk a little bit later about some other wildlife health issues that we intend to deal with a budget initiative. The last one is an education stewardship ethic activity. We have a number of programs. You might have heard of the Minocqua program, which is an aquatic education program. We've also got a fishing in neighborhoods program here in the metro area that provides fishing opportunity and related educational opportunity throughout the Seven County Metro. Our Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, our Southeast Asian program that does outreach with that community that has a high interest in hunting and angling, and several others. What's that? Okay. Mr. Meyer asked me to point out one last slide before we get into the initiatives. If you'll turn to page 10. It's an important trend, and it's a kind of an emerging trend that we're spending a lot of time looking at and trying to address here, and it's kind of changing rates of participation for recreation, and of particular interest to us is rates of participation for hunting and angling. And this graph, the blue lines are fishing participation rates, the red lines are hunting participation rates, and these are changes in the rates of participation from 2000 to 2005 by the various age classes across the top there. So,
excuse me, Director, I think that's slide 10, not
yes,
page 10.
Yes, so slide 10, sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead.
So any bars below that heavy dark line there reflect a reduced rate of participation over the course of those 5 years, and anything above that line would show increased rates of participation. And what this shows is that the younger age classes of citizens here aren't participating at the same rates as older classes, and in fact, we're losing ground with those age classes. And what we're facing here in the state with both hunters and anglers is kind of a double whammy. We've got our largest segment of our population, our baby boomers. They're slowly hitting retirement age and starting to drop out of hunting and angling as they get older. We've got fewer young people coming behind them, and those young people are participating in hunting and fishing at lower rates than this this baby boom generation did. And so our expectation based on these trends is we're going to see not only lower rates of participation in these activities, but lower overall numbers of hunters and anglers. And that has implications for funding. It has implications for just support for conservation efforts in the state. It has implications for our ability to manage deer populations and goose populations and that kind of thing.
Mr. Chad, in terms of this trend, do you have any surveys or reasons why this is happening? I mean, we know it's happening, but what are some of the reasons that, if you've found any?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's we don't have any real good concrete information, but there has here in Minnesota there have been studies elsewhere in the country, and they found that there's a couple of things that drive these downward trends. One is increasingly urban populations. They found that urban residents tend to participate in these activities at a lower rate than rural residents. Minority populations tend to participate at lower rates than white male populations, for example. And so with an increasingly diverse population here in the state, we'd expect rates to decline. And then I think it's something that we've all observed. There's just more and more pressure on people's time. There's more organized activities, less time available, less for these types of recreation. And it appears that these are some activities that families just don't have as much time for.
Mr. Shad, has access been any kind of a problem?
Mr. Chairman, I think that can be a really important factor here, and certainly it has been a factor in many other states, especially eastern states that don't have the public land base that we've got here in Minnesota. We're pretty fortunate with our forest land base, our public land base in the forested part of the state. And our pretty extensive wildlife management area program, which is largely centered in agricultural areas, it probably hasn't been as important an issue here in Minnesota as these other states. But I expect that finding high-quality opportunity, especially on weekends, can be a challenge for folks, and it probably is having an impact out there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pierzo.
I also believe that we probably are a victim of more leasing than we even know about in this state, because the states around us certainly are maxed out practically with leasing in some of the good hunting areas. So it might be that there's even more access problem than we can do anything about.
Senator Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chad, have you or anybody else ever taken these statistics, these trend lines, and compare them to the trend lines for boat ownership in the state? Is there,
Mr. Chairman, Sarah Fredrickson, they have done some looking at that. My understanding, I'm not absolutely certain on this, but my understanding is that boat ownership is actually up, but that people are using their boats more for recreation and less for fishing. So it's larger boats, they're using them more for skiing and that kind of thing, and so we're seeing kind of the increasing boat ownership but declining angling, and so people are buying boats for different reasons basically.
And Mr. Chad, is there any obvious way that we can reverse some of these statistics that you could see?
Mr. Chairman, there are some things that we're trying now that other states have had experience with that do have some effect, and we'll touch on those in our initiatives. Kansas is one state that's kind of led the way here, and they've pioneered some really successful programs. A number of states have done some really intensive marketing of angling opportunities and have seen very immediate increases in license sales as a result of that. So we think there are some things that we can do, and we think it would be a good investment in the future of hunting and angling, a relatively small expenditure to get folks involved. What the research has found is that if you can get to kids early and get them involved, you're a lot more likely to retain those kids as future hunters and anglers, and so a lot of our work would be focused at the younger kids especially.
And Mr. Chad, you said you were going to analyze some initiatives here in a little bit. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on to the legislative initiatives found on slide 11, you can see we do have several in the Fish and Wildlife Division that we need to talk about. The first one, Prairie Wetlands Complex, and again, I'm going to be using the fact sheets that hopefully you all have with you still as well to help walk through this. This is located on page 39 of the fact sheet packets, or it's actually on page 105 of your budget book. What we're looking for here is $575,000 out of the Game and Fish Fund and $575,000 from the General Fund for our Prairie Wetlands initiatives. This is related work, or it's a big part of the Working Lands Initiative that we've talked about previously in Policy Committee and in other committees, working with landowners throughout the state and also our partnerships, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, other conservation groups, to establish our long-term goal is we need to protect an additional 2 million acres of prairie wetlands and grasslands while maintaining our existing habitat base. You'll see on the fact sheets, I do have some tables there that I'm referring to. It's on page 41. With that, we have an annual target of protecting at least 40,000 acres annually through DNR and partnership efforts. These efforts are often with federal government, wetland protection programs, CRP, those types of programs, working with the landowners so they know the opportunities that they have in front of them to conserve their land, not necessarily the state buying all of this land, but working with the landowners to protect the land. What we're proposing to do with these dollars, a large portion of them will go to enhancing our conservation delivery system, working with the landowner, doing that the kitchen table kind of conversation that we need to have with these landowners to make them comfortable with what we're doing, but also making them aware of the programs that are available to them to protect their land.
And Commissioner Meyer, the Federal Fish and Wildlife, they have a similar program, or they're contemplating a similar program?
Mr. Shad?
Mr. Chairman, we're actually, we've developed a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on a program that we call Working Lands Initiative, and it actually has a number of other partners, including some of the conservation organizations, the federal farm agencies, and agricultural interests. And what we're trying to do with those is various agencies and programs is to try to focus this wetland and grassland work in areas where it makes the most sense, using some of our GIS technology, some of our modeling, so that we're not scattergunning these programs across the land, but we're all kind of leveraging each other's expertise and our dollars to get the most bang for the conservation dollar. And you can actually see on slide 13 a map that shows the results of some of that targeting. The areas in gray would be areas where if we do wetland and grassland work there, we would benefit the largest number of species, not only waterfowl, but pheasants and many non-game species, and provide some benefits to water quality, and that's where we want to focus our work. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, our agency, and many of these other agencies are agreeing to try to focus their dollars, focus their staff in these areas where we can do the most good.
Thank you. Senator Frederickson, did you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shad. I was looking on page 106 of our budget documents, and you're talking about the mallard duck population. and you say that the Mallard recruitment rate is 0.43. Would you give a little more explanation of what that stands for? It's 0.43 of what?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, that would be the number of new Mallards, the number of young Mallards added to the population for each Mallard that exists in the breeding population. So, for example, if we had 100 birds in that breeding population to start, we would have to add 4.3 birds in order for that population just to stay level with itself. Anything less than that, and we'd see a declining population. We'd need to have 4.9 produced. Anything less than that, we'd have a declining population. Anything more than that, we'd have an increasing population. The fact that our rate has been 0.43 over time means that we're actually a population sink. That means that we're attracting birds here, but we're not producing enough birds because of the poor quality of our habitat to even hold that population stable.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chad, do I understand that we are attracting a sufficient number of breeding pairs, but that their nesting success and brood-raising success is below what it should be? Am I
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, actually we have a problem with both. Our goal for our breeding population is to increase the total number of breeders from an average of about 630,000 birds that we've seen up to 1 million birds. So we do want to improve wetland habitats so that we can attract more birds here in the first place. And then we want to improve our grasslands so that we can increase the productivity of those million birds. And so it's a two-phase problem. We want to increase the number of breeders, and we want to make them more productive.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chad, this initiative is designed to do both?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, exactly. We unveiled a duck recovery plan about 1 year ago that set this 1 million bird, 1 million productive bird population goal. From that, we derived the habitat objectives that we need to get there, and that's the 2 million acres over the next 50 years. And so that works out to 40,000 acres per year, which seems like a lot, but it's actually, I think, in the realm of possibility. Last year, for example, looking across all the programs, we found that we did add 43,000 acres of wetland and grassland habitat in this prairie pothole portion of the state. So it's certainly doable, but we need to sustain that in the long term, and we need to do it smart. We need to do it in the right places, and that's what our Working Lands Initiative is all about, bringing these agencies and these programs together and making sure that we're spending those dollars where we get the most benefit for ducks and other wildlife.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chad, one last question. And is this initiative paralleling or enhancing the LCCMR project of about 3 bienniums now of the quarters project? You're a partner in that, I believe, as are a number of others. How does this relate to what you're doing there?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Sarah Fredrickson, that's a great question. Many of the same partners in the Habitat Corridors Project funded by LCCMR are also partners in the Working Lands Initiative. And if you look at the corridors that have been defined for the Corridors Project, there's a lot of overlap. And actually, we can use this technology, this focusing technology, to identify places within those corridors where it makes the most sense to do this wetland and grassland work. So we're actually working with those same partners to try to bring those two programs together, and certainly that makes sense. I think it's a really good marriage of looking at corridors and then habitat within those corridors where it makes the most sense to do the work.
Senator Deal.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Shad, on slide 13, there's a shaded brown areas which are identified as the best areas for establishing high-quality prairie wetland complexes. And then there's all these little red dots running through the state. What are those red what do the red dots mean?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, the red dots are actually a red line. It just defines the boundary of the prairie pothole, what we call the prairie pothole region, and our primary focus with this prairie wetland initiative is to the west and south of that line, out in the prairie pothole region where our losses of prairie and wetland habitats have been most severe. It's not to say that we don't work on the right side of that line, but our primary focus and the efforts of most of the agencies and partners is to the left of that line.
Mr. Chair, members, another component of this project or this partnership is also looking at the opportunities that are coming before us today, dealing with biofuels and prairies and grasslands as well. Some of the initiatives that are in Senator Kubley's bill, I know that you're going to be hearing in the Agriculture Committee, Senate File 480, dealing with the opportunity to put energy kind of reserve programs in place. We need to coordinate with those types of, with those land producers to make sure that the grasses they're growing provide high quality habitat and are harvested in a sustainable manner for the populations to live, for the breeding pairs to come in, survive, and then move on. So there's a lot of opportunities to work within the integrating grassland conservation and biofuels markets and technologies that are out there or that are emerging. And some of the activities in this program will be working with those other activities on the ground to make sure that they work in harmony.
Commissioner Meyer, Mr. Shad, would you anticipate that the habitat portion of a dedicated funding bill would a portion of this would be going into the working wetlands and what you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, members, we would be working very hard to make sure that money did go to those programs with whatever the body that will be distributing those funds. Certainly these types of conservation programs are very pressing and looking at innovative ways to get our duck population where it needs to be is what we'll be doing.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Chaudhry.
Remember, Mr. Chair, dedicated funding is to supplant our current budget, and so we, to the extent that we increase your efforts on working lands, the dedicated funding could go there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, exactly. Working with our stakeholders out there to increase our activities is what we need to do. So thank you for bringing that point up.
Yes, Senator Chaudhry, this would augment. I mean, the dedicated funding would augment.
Augment, yeah.
Okay. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, one last question, Mr. Shad. When we're talking about the breeding ducks and their success, as I understand it, you need at least three elements. One is temporary wetlands with invertebrates that they can feast on when they first migrate back, and then you need the grasslands and the habitat to nest, and then probably seasonal wetlands, shallow wetlands that do have water. Are we sure that it's the grasslands that's the limiting factor in breeding pairs, or is it the temporary wetlands, or all three, the temporary and seasonal wetlands and the grasslands? Are we targeting all three with this?
Mr. Chairman, Sarah Frederickson, our education efforts are paying off, I guess. You're pretty well versed in duck biology here. You're right. The ducks require a variety of wetland types. Early in the spring, it's the seasonal and temporary wetlands that hold water for. They provide water very early in the spring. They're some of the first to open up, but that water doesn't last very long. But when there is water there, they're just full of invertebrates. The ducks. Returning from migration, really key in on those basins, and that's a really important factor in determining where they're going to kind of set up shop and decide to establish a nesting territory. And those are some of the wetlands that we've seen some of the most dramatic losses directed at. Once they find a place to nest, of course, the grassland's very important. And then once those ducks are hatched, they need to find their way to the more permanent water bodies that, that hold water throughout the summer so that those young birds have cover and food to get them to the point where they can fly and go and find water on their own. So our concept here through Working Lands is to develop what we call complexes of wetlands and grasslands. These are 4 to 9 square miles that contain all of these different elements that ducks and other wildlife need within relatively close proximity. If you have grasslands but you don't have the temporary wetlands, or if you have the temporary wetlands but not the more important, permanent wetlands, ducks are going to have a really hard time of it. And so by focusing all these programs, by focusing the work of these various agencies and conservation organizations into these discrete areas to build these complexes, that's how we kind of get the bang for the conservation dollar, and that's a very important aspect. I think our past efforts in doing wetland and grassland work, where we've done a little bit here and a little bit there, haven't been as effective as it could be because we haven't had that focusing and the building of those complexes.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the, I think it's in your other sheet, the whatever you call these other sheets that you have.
Fact sheet.
Thank you. That says the target is 40,000 acres annually, and so is that your, that's what we would get with this additional money, is an additional 40,000 acres a year to get to your long-term goal? Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, our duck recovery plan goal is that 40,000 acres per year over 50 years. Our strategy for getting there is this Working Lands Initiative, this partnering and the focusing and that kind of thing. And so these dollars support that partnership. They support development of these local teams. They support innovation that takes place out in the local areas. They're going to support some of these energy types of initiatives where we get both wildlife and energy benefits from some of these grasslands. And so it's a way to accelerate and leverage the existing programs out there to ensure that we can meet that 40,000 per acre goal target. There's a lot of other programs that are actually going to fund that 40,000 acres per year. It's going to be the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, the Wetland Reserve Program, the RIM Reserve Program, that kind of thing. But in order to get those programs on the ground, we think Working Lands and this investment here will allow us to do that.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get at the additional increment of money here. And so are you saying the 40,000 acres annual goal, that you already have that target in place from past years? And so this is not going to get us additional acres. This will just get us those, keep you on track to meet that goal that you already have?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, that's correct. And it will also ensure that those 40,000 acres are done in a way that they're going to provide the most possible benefits to wildlife and to water quality. Again, this we can do the 40,000 acres per year the way we've always done it, which is kind of scattergunning it across the landscape, or we can do it smarter and better. And this investment will make sure that we do it smarter and better.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe we left off talking on slide 13 about the Prairie Pothole Region and the partnership. Moving on to slide 14, it shows a picture of one of these complexes in the Lake Maria area. This area is a waterfall production lake, and it shows how we utilize existing programs that are out there to create these large complexes that provide the habitat that we need. You can see this picture shows the WLI is a Working Lands Initiative target area. The yellow lines are where CREP projects are out there. The red is a proposed wildlife management area acquisition. Green shows the wildlife management area watershed basins and CRP lands in Murray County. And as Director Shad was talking about, this appropriation will allow us to work more effectively and target our conservation work to create these large complexes rather than going out and buying a piece here another piece there, trying to connect them all to create large blocks of conservation lands. The next couple slides, slide 15, we talked about, that's just a bar graph showing the wetland, the acreage that we're trying to acquire, wetland and grassland. And then 16 and 17 just are some graphics that show populations, duck population trends, where we talked about our objective to have 1 million breeding pairs. And also the pheasant population trend slide on page 17. You can see our targets there. Our target is to have an annual harvest of 450,000 pheasants by 2008 and 750,000 by 2025. That target requires a habitat basin that can support an average fall population of 3 million pheasants. So we need to have those large complexes there in order for these birds to survive.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, how are we going to accomplish this with some of the recent announcements from the U.S. Agriculture Secretary that they're not taking any more CREP applications this year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, that
combine that with some of the corn price issues that seem to be potentially affecting CREP and other programs. How are we going to accomplish this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, that issue does exemplify the challenges that we have lying in front of us. Working at the federal level, we already are. The Commissioner Holston is in touch with our congressional delegation and also the Department of Agriculture about some of those impacts that are there. We also need to work with our agricultural committees in the Senate and the House and the Department of Agriculture to make sure that people understand the needs of those programs and protecting the lands that we have. The benefit of the Working Lands Initiative, or what it really allows us to do, is to make sure people understand those lands that they have, the specific productivity levels of them. In many cases, it's not going to be effective for somebody to go in and plant these low harvesting level lands where the productivity isn't as good. They'll be better off to remain in the programs, and trying to make sure that we have programs at levels that the state can enroll in is something that we take very seriously, and we're working very hard to make sure we don't have to face that barrier in the future. Working with the agriculture community and the conservation community is the key to success in the Working Lands Initiative. So, Senator Chaudhry, we're very aware of those issues. We're hoping it doesn't come to that, but it's something we need to be proactive on rather than reactive.
And then follow up on that, on the specific project, I had a chance to visit Lake Moriah in December, and it was a very impressive project. At that time, it was not my understanding that the landowner had enrolled in CREP that you have outlined in yellow, that big portion surrounding the lake. Has that changed since then?
I think Mr. Shad would have more specifics on that, hopefully. Otherwise, we will get back to you on that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, I'm not sure if that's a proposed project or if that's a project that's been completed. I know there was one of the problems that landowner faced, and actually it's a good example of how the Working Lands Initiative works. That landowner had land that qualified for CREP, but a portion of his land along the lake and around the farmstead, my understanding is, did not qualify for CREP. And if he could not get his total ownership enrolled in the program, he wasn't interested in the program. And so the Working Lands team that we put together at that local area of kind of our local resource managers from the various agencies put their heads together and came up with an innovative way to package some funding so that we could apply some permanent protection to that entire ownership, and that allowed him to consider the CREP enrollment. Without that effort, he wouldn't have been as interested in the program. However, I'm not absolutely certain that enrollment has taken place, but we can check on that and get back to you.
Thank you.
Senator Perzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Shad. I'm slide 17, the pheasant population. How do you envision, where do you envision in the state to expand the populations of pheasant. There are some places we used to be almost overrun with them in Dakota County. It was wonderful because all the sport writers were saying, go down to Dakota County and hunt pheasants. Well, they did. And I know there's at least one in the township of Castle Rock, like struts across the yard every once in a while. But something must keep it there. But I'm trying to figure out how we can bring that back. And if you are looking at some of the places that traditionally had good populations but have lost them.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Parisel, that's a good question. We've actually seen quite a remarkable response by pheasant populations to the large acreage of CRP that we've got out on the ground right now. We've got about 1.8 million acres of CRP out there. We've had some mild winters, some favorable spring nesting conditions, and the last 2 years we've seen pheasant harvests exceeding 500,000 birds. In fact, it's the highest harvest of pheasants that we've seen since the soil bank days of the 50s and 1960s, and so we've found that if you put the habitat out there, they'll come, they'll be there, and so these land retirement programs such as CRP and some of the more permanent programs like CREP and WRP and RIM Reserve and that kind of thing are really key to making this happen.
Mr. Chairman, as a follow-up to that, I remember when Mr. Landwehr worked for the department and came out to Dakota County, and this person I know quite well took him around the county and introduced him to a lot of farmers who were open to having food plots on their land, and it was very successful. So it might be something to duplicate again in many areas of the state.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Parris, so they're going to talk about slide 21. That references one of the greatest opportunities we have for pheasant habitat, and that's our roadside habitat. There's hundreds of thousands of acres of roadsides that can be managed for wildlife habitat. And if you look at the bottom of the photo, it says that the roadsides can produce 25 to 50% of all pheasant hatchlings. So that's an emerging issue, one that's been untapped, and I think it'd represent a great thing for our pheasant population. We'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to it, but the top picture represents kind of the ideal roadside that's mowed for safety but contains good pheasant habitat.
Commissioner Mayer, go. Senator Deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I put together a booklet last year that's called Minnesota Needs More Livestock Because Livestock is Good for the Environment and Good for the Economy. And just one point in this pheasant issue, I have a neighbor in my township with 4,000 acres and 700 beef cows, and he's feeding his livestock, his beef cows, out on cornfields that are not plowed. So the corn stalks are there all winter, and when he goes out there to feed, the pheasants come out of the swamp like crazy to eat with the cattle. So they've got some place to go in the wintertime and get some decent feed. And on my own farm, I've got sheep grazing untilled cornfields all winter long, too. So there's a lot of pheasants in there when we combine the corn. They can go down in the river bottom into the tall grass if they want good cover, but they can come out in that cornfield any time during the day and find corn to eat all winter long. So, and right next to me is a turkey farm, 10-barn turkey complex, and all around that turkey complex is uncut hay that's just left unharvested, which is another good place for them to be. So the point is that at least in my township, and I think in many other places across the state, we need more livestock to help protect the environment, and there's a synergistic relationship there between livestock producers and pheasant producers, or the pheasant population. And I would say the pheasant population on my farm is the highest I've seen it in probably... Well, I see a blurb back there in about 1980 on this chart, but somewhere between 85 and 90, there was a tremendous pheasant population on my farm, and it fell off, and now it's come back.
And Senator Dill, we don't always recognize what you're getting at there. We don't even always recognize that particular habitat as part of our inventory. I'm assuming that's one of your points. Go ahead, Director.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on to the next initiative, if we don't have any other questions about the prairie land. Slide 18 talks about our angling and hunting recruitment and retention initiative. And we talked about some of the pressures that we're facing with and challenges we're facing with our recruitment and retention. What this $150,000 appropriation would do is we need to coordinate our existing hunting and angling youth programs with mentoring programs such as Big Brothers and Big Sisters. They have a Pass It On program, trying to do a lot more of those types of activities and establish monitoring programs and liaisons within existing hunting and fishing conservation organizations to work with these types of groups and line up the people who enjoy and who really relish the outdoor activities and try to take on people, children in particular, who don't have those opportunities. We have a lot of interest in doing this, and we think we can be very successful in doing that. Also, just facilitate the recruiting of mentors through the mentoring organizations and also our own firearm safety instructors, for example, helping them to line up with these organizations to be mentors to children would be a huge success in us retaining and renewing our growth in those areas. Another part of it is going to be marketing. $50,000 of this appropriation we would use for marketing. An example would be to examine our license database and try to target some of the people who have bought fishing licenses in the past but haven't bought one for several years. Try to figure out what the barriers are, let them know what's going on, where the opportunities are. Iowa recently utilized a marketing campaign to boost its fishing license sales by 22,000 by doing some targeted marketing and working with the data that we have in our electronic licensing system. They were able to sell another 22,000 licenses, which is an 8% increase just by going back and doing what a lot of businesses do, is trying to find their old customers and bring them back. So a couple of those no-nonsense things is what we want to do with that $150,000 appropriation. It's a very serious issue, not only in hunting and fishing, but in our outdoor recreation overall, canoeing, hiking, camping. So you'll see us talking about these types of things, as we talked about in Trails and Waterways and in Parks and Recreation Divisions as well. The next change item we spoke a little bit about in the Policy Committee yesterday, and I know Senator Vickerman has a lot of concerns, as we do. $132,000, this is a new general fund appropriation to deal with the emerging wildlife health issues, especially TB, as we're facing bovine tuberculosis challenges up in northern Minnesota. We have many of our staff participating as we speak in meetings up in this pictured area right outside south of Roseau. And I know Senator Chaudhry was just up there over the weekend. The circles show the maps of where we need to target some deer harvesting activities related to the bovine TB issue up there right now. The appropriation that we have that we're requesting for in this change item will deal with the TB, but also help us to make sure that we monitor and deal with wildlife disease issues across the state. So TB, chronic wasting disease, making sure that we're prepared and dealing with those issues as we need to be proactive, takes a lot of our time. And this is our response to fire is a very top priority for us. Our response to disease and wildlife management and with these diseases outbreaks has to be quick, effective, and most of all, make sure we know what we're doing and doing it for the right reasons.
Commissioner, go ahead. No. Commissioner, is the $132,000, does that reflect our recent problems up there and the fact that we maybe have more disease management problems than we thought, or does this reflect that?
Mr. Chair, members, this budget initiative was put together before some of the activities that are ongoing on right now. We're in the process of trying to work with the administration and finance to hopefully reflect some more financial resources that are there in a supplemental budget. I can't tell you any more than that right now, but I know we're doing all we can to make sure we have the resources to take the activities that need to be done, and we're working with Senator Vickerman to make sure his concerns are met as well.
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Vickerman.
On that point, The bill that Senator Scoy will be coming is about $900,000 in the two cycles, $450,000 and $450,000. I took issue with that yesterday, but I'm not going to take issue with it today. But what I do want you, Mr. Myers, you're having a meeting tonight or tomorrow. I'd like a report of what the landowners I just like a report back just to see how receptive they are, if they're upset or.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vickerman, we will do that. Also, communicate with the chairs of the finance and the policy committees as well. Let them know how that did transpire, because it is a big issue up there. Moving on to the next change item, fishing tournament licenses on slide 20. In working with our budget oversight committee, this is an area that they were concerned about. Our fisheries subcommittee identified or had some discussions with them about how the costs of managing fishing licenses, fishing tournament applications, and those licenses are being paid for. Right now, they're being paid for just as a general fund or game and fish fund appropriation. Their desire is for us, they wanted us to develop a process or a proposal to have those activities pay for themselves. So what we're looking at doing is trying to recover the cost, which is $108,000 based on last year's activities, for those fishing license tournament registrations. Now, as you know, there are statutory requirements for the department found in 16A that we cannot overcharge or undercharge for our services. So what we're trying to do, and we will have before you pull your budget bill together, is how this will work out actually, what we're going to be charging for those licenses, but we will be charging our actual costs of processing and getting that work done, not overcharging or undercharging. So we will be coming together with the committee in the governor's budget bill. I believe there'll be language, or there is language, that deals with how that fee schedule will be established by commissioner's order, published in the state register. But we will make sure you will fully understand that before we move ahead with this. Moving on to slide 21, and thank you, Senator Chaudhry, for the introduction. And maybe you just want to cover this one, since I know you're an expert with our Roadside Habitat program. But really, what we're trying to do, or what we need to do, is continue the work that we've been doing on our Roadsides for Wildlife program, developing and continuing to develop that relationship with the road authorities, providing them the technical assistance to increase the awareness of the benefits of planting these roadsides in habitat, reducing the mowings, making sure that they are abiding by the laws on the times that they can be mowed, and also increasing the use of native prairie grasses and wildflowers. This also fits in very well with the potential that we have out there for biofuel development, native prairie grasses and forbs that I know you're all aware of. Also, reducing the spraying of herbicides, and that date I mentioned there, reduce the haying of these roadsides until at least July 31st, when these hatchlings are out in the field. We recognize the need for this program. The important part is developing that relationship with the counties, the people who are managing those roadsides, and having them realize the benefits that are out there, working with MnDOT, the Living Snow Fence Program, things of that nature.
I'm sorry, Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, maybe someone at the table knows the answer to this, but on the issue of spraying herbicides in road ditches, I would think the most common one would probably just plain be 2,4-D to get after the thistles and broadleaves and baby trees that are starting to come in there. And there may be some other brush herbicides or herbicides for killing bigger trees that might be used by the road authority at certain points during the season. But if you did go over the road ditch earlier in the year to get after the thistles and broadleaf weeds and so forth with 2,4-D, what evidence do you have that that damages the roadside habitat as it relates to wildlife?
Director.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, depending on what chemicals, what herbicides are used, the impact might be on direct mortality on chicks, for example, if birds were actually sprayed by the chemical, or nests were sprayed, for example, we might lose those birds or lose that nest. Some chemicals could affect production of insects, which are an important food source for young chicks. And so it's very different depending on the chemical. Generally, spraying of chemicals isn't a real good thing. If nothing else, just the disturbance is not a good thing for birds.
Senator Dill.
But specifically 2,4-D, what evidence do you have that that would be damaging?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, you know, I'm not real familiar with that literature. We can dig some of that up though, and get that information to you on 2,4-D.
Okay.
Part of the program is.
Senator Chaudhry,
when you're done.
Part of the opportunities that we have are working with those road authorities to educate them on alternatives, different ways to manage these things, and possibly different herbicides that may be less toxic. So providing that technical assistance and outreach. But we will get back to you, Senator, on some of your specific concerns.
Senator Schreider.
Just to follow up, Senator Dill, the idea is not to eliminate the spraying because that those noxious weeds do need to be controlled. The encouragement is towards spot spraying and spot need, where specifically where the area of noxious weeds are located, not to eliminate it. The question I had on the habitat program was the budget has the currently the budget has a roadside habitat program in the general fund, and the department is proposing to move that to the game and fish fund. What's the thought process behind moving that from general fund to game and fish fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, as you recall, when this program was first refunded or reauthorized, the funding was going to come from the stamp accounts, which have specific dedicated statutory authorities on them. The Budget Oversight Committee did not like that idea, but we were able to fund it out of general fund dollars. Now, and going back and having some discussions, it's more appropriate to come out of the overall Game and Fish Fund, not the dedicated accounts, because it is providing habitat and there are benefits that it do provide to conservation, wildlife protection, and things of that nature.
Let me follow up, Mr. Chair. Where is that $100,000 of the general fund allocated then?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, as we talked about in the beginning of our DNR budget reallocations, we have many different programs that are out there being funded out of the general fund. And specifically, I think if you want to track it down, Mr. Chair, I've been informed that language that was passed was a one-time general fund appropriation. It was not part of the base. So that's why we shifted this to the Game and Fish Fund. Our general fund reallocations is where I was going, is when we built our budget. We did reprogram general fund dollars, as we've talked about. So, but because of that specific appropriation being one time, we did not have that in the out years. So we recognize the need for the program and the ability to fund it out of the Game and Fish Fund. So that's what our proposal is right now.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson?
No, never mind.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on. Slide 22. Part of our proposal is to achieve or to look for the authority to have statutory appropriations on many of those deer or those wildlife accounts that we specifically talked about. The wildlife acquisition account, deer management account, deer and bear management account, emergency deer feeding and wild cervid health account, the Minnesota Migratory Waterfowl Stamp Account, Trout and Salmon Stamp, Pheasant Stamp, and Turkey Stamp. So all of these stamp accounts, or these dedicated accounts, are found in 97A. And they have specific language that we can only spend those dollars on. For example, the Wildlife Acquisition Account. At least 50% must be used for land costs and other land acquisition costs, development, and maintenance of wildlife funds. The use of the deer and bear management account can only be used on deer and bear management programs, including the computerized licensing system we use to issue the licenses for those accounts and to do our registration systems on the harvesting of those animals. So the examples that we have here, we cannot spend these dollars on any other things except what's in statute. These are the accounts. Many of them are what our budget oversight is. Our citizen volunteers that oversee these accounts peruse through and examine our costs down to the penny sometimes. They keep a close eye on these things. It doesn't make sense for us right now to be leaving money in the bank when there's conservation needs for these ongoing issues. So what we're asking for is a statutory authority to spend the balances, to spend those dollars in the accounts as we need to. A good example is the pheasant stamp. We sold a lot more pheasant stamps this year than we ever anticipated, so there's going to be a balance in that account that we are not able to access until we come back to the legislature to ask for those dollars. So, and a lot of that activity takes place in the spring for conservation planting. The programs that we're doing with those stamp accounts, it takes us another legislative session to get at that balance that we generate. So what we're asking for is the authority to access the funds in those accounts to spend on the specific statutory purposes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bach.
I have always thought that statutory appropriations are not a good thing. If the department is taking money in from hunters or fishermen in the state, they should have to come back to the legislature so we can review how they're spending it, that they shouldn't be able to just take the money in, recycle the money out with no kind of legislative oversight at all. So I'd appreciate, Madam Chair, if we would avoid statutory appropriations so that the legislature knows what the department is spending money on. And I think, I don't want to speak for Senator Fredrickson, but we both, I think, have shared concerns about the idea of statutory appropriations.
Other comments? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I was wondering if you're going to be here when I talk about that. I thought I was going to get away with it. I do understand your concern, Senator Bach.
Senator Anderson.
Oh, well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out that Senator Bach did miss the last fee, so you did get here a few minutes late. So.
I was with Senator Fogelman. What did we do there?
Oh, just for the fishing tournaments. It's pretty minor.
Or just try to recover costs.
Exactly. That cost. Not a penny more, not a penny less.
Not a new program we're going to fund with fees?
No.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, we understand your concerns, and fund integrity is one of our number one missions and goals throughout the department. It says that these accounts, the attention given to these specific accounts by the Budget Oversight Committee, we feel provide us that oversight, and also in their reports back to the legislature, provide that reporting and tracking that would be needed. It just will allow us the ability to access the dollars and to get them on the ground faster to meet the needs. Moving on to page 23.
I've been advised that if we move to page 82, in terms of financial implications of some of these funds, the expenses are more than are actually allocated. Is that?
Mr. Chairman and members, I think what the DNR is showing here, both on their fact sheet, page 45, and on page 82 of the governor's rec, is that whether we go to statutory expenditures or whether we, as a legislature, have to appropriate the money, on some of these accounts, we have to reduce some of the what you would call base or what the existing expenses are in some of these accounts that they cannot sustain the expenses that we are currently using. So whether they go to a statutory appropriation or we directly appropriate it, we're going on some of these accounts, such as the deer habitat and waterfowl habitat, trout, and even the pheasant. I was actually surprised the pheasant one we have to reduce given the number of that's coming in. But anyways, we may have to reduce the expenditures in some of these accounts.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mueller, thank you for bringing that up. The reason for the decrease in the accounts is due to an error. We need to correct an error that was found in the small game surcharge projections that began in fiscal year 06 and 07. So what we're doing is adjusting these figures based upon that accounting error that occurred last biennium. So that is reflected, and it's actually $1.149 million. So thank you for bringing that up. I forgot to mention that to the committee.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, what was the nature of the accounting error?
Mr. Chair, it was a spreadsheet error, and it was at our level, or was an error that we identified in the spreadsheet after the appropriations were already taken place?
Okay. Senator Perzo.
Mr. Chairman, before we leave slide 22, I know that Mr. Meyer suggested we're going to 23. Would you define for me wildlife acquisition on that slide 22? Because at the page here, I'm trying to figure wildlife acquisition, is that acquisition of wildlife or habitat for wildlife?
Madam Chair, members, the wildlife acquisition accounts found in 97.071. I believe this comes from the small game surcharge that is charged on the small game licenses, which is $7.50 on each license goes into this account.
$6.50.
What?
Mr.
Each
Chairman.
Each hunting license we sell, a portion of that goes into this account for wildlife acquisition.
But, Mr. Chairman, I want wildlife acquisition defined. Not the cost, but the definition of acquisition of wildlife. I mean, what is it? Of what? Land?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Stock it.
Chad.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Parasol, the statutory language says that at least 50% of this account must be used for land costs. And so when we buy land for wildlife management area, half of this account must be used for the actual purchase of land. The other 50% can be used for land costs. It can also be used for the associated costs we have in purchasing land, appraisal fees and that kind of thing, or for development of those properties. But at least half of that revenue has to be used for the actual purchase of land, the actual cost of buying the land.
Mr. Chairman, would it have ever been considered to use that money for leasing or, for incentive payments for it? Not just leasing, but any of the contracts you can make with the landowner for purposes of your goals.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Sarah Parasol, this particular source of funding hasn't been mentioned as a source of leasing. This was actually one of our original accounts that we used to start the Save the Wetlands program and the Wildlife Management Area program. Stakeholders are pretty protective of that. They want to kind of maintain that fee title acquisition program. If we are going to get into a leasing program, they don't want to do it at the expense of these current acquisition efforts. So I think most of the discussion regarding leasing has looked at other kind of new sources of funding rather than these existing land acquisition accounts.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, moving on to slide 23. Again, these are found under the DNR budget reallocations. Another recommendation the Budget Oversight Committee asked us to consider was the transferring of the treaty costs from the Game and Fish Fund to the General Fund. That represents $258,000. We're also looking for $128,000 that we're seeking the reauthorization of General Fund dollars for our South Metro Wildlife Program, and the $90,000 to help us with our biannual costs, I should say, of the Game and Fish Fund Oversight Committee, staffing, preparing reports, working with them, making sure that we have the resources to have them up and running. So we recognize that as a priority as well.
What's, Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
What's the South Metro Wildlife Program?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, that's actually a reflection of some of the responsibility we've taken on with the UMOR property and then some of the other land acquisition activities in Dakota County. We've taken on a large land base that's going to be managed pretty intensively, the habitat and the use, and we're using this reallocation to cover those costs that we're going to incur.
Commissioner, looking out on the Game and Fish Fund over the next, particularly the next biennium, it appears to be decreasing. Are we looking at fee increases here, maybe if not this biennium and the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, members, we have not gotten to that point yet. Our budget that we have before you I think specifically you're looking at the Heritage Enhancement Account and other areas. We recognize the conservation needs right now that we have that are pressing, and we're trying to access those funds that are there now. The two-year budget that we have before us today represents our best ability to access the dollars we have or we have access to meet the critical conservation needs for the next 2 years. We will have to come back the next biennium with another budget proposal that will either show decreased funding levels for some of those programs or begin those difficult discussions of what do we do with our fees that our customers pay to get the services that they desire.
Thank you, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, that does conclude the discussion of the change items for Fish and Wildlife Division. Slide 24 is just an overall pie chart that shows where the governor's recommendations for fiscal year 08 and 09 lie. You see 75% game and fish fund dollars and 4.2% general fund with the other accounts dispersed throughout there. DNR's Division of Fish and Wildlife does represent 25.7% of the total DNR budget. So out of eight divisions and one bureau, game and fish or fish and wildlife is 25.7%. But also remember, a lot of those revenues come from the people buying their hunting and fishing licenses and stamps that are there as well. Slide 25 is just an overall table talking about what we've gone through here for your reference to look through. And then what we have here represented on this slide, it represents $167,438,000 in total spending, which is an increase of 5.5% or the total spending for the previous biennium was $167,000. Our budget this year, it represents an increase of 5.5% or $9.2 million for a total FY08-09 biennial budget proposed of $176,706,000. That concludes the Fish and Wildlife Division, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, Mr. Shad, I have another question that sort of ties together a couple of things we talked about and also a bill that passed out of policy committee without recommendation that's coming here. And that bill was to reinstate a reduced senior citizen fishing license. And then we also talked about the drop in participation in fishing. And we also talked about fees, which could include fishing fees. How sensitive is the participation in fishing by young families to increasing the fishing license or the level the fishing license is now? I've been around you long enough to know that if we would reduce the fishing fee for license fee for senior citizens, we're going to have to raise money somewhere else, which would be on the younger folks, the younger families. What is the relationship between what we charge for fishing licenses and younger adults fishing? Is there a relationship?
Mr. Chair, well, Director Shad's looking for some figures. I just want to say thank you for bringing that issue up, because license fees and free licenses are an issue that we have a lot of different bills floating around right now, not only for senior citizens but also for veterans. And what do we do for our veterans coming home, and how do those impact our accounts are very important. Also, there's a bill out there to provide for people are talking about providing free licenses for our firearm safety instructors after a certain number of years as well. The integrity of our accounts are based upon the numbers of licenses we sell. So before Director Shad gets into your specific question, I just want to let you know we take those issues very seriously. Last year, we did allow for military veterans and active military people to attend parks, get into our parks for free. So you're going to see some language just correcting some of that language there. But we continually have those discussions on a day-to-day basis on what the impacts will be and what should be the policy for free licenses. So, Director Shad.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, the information we've got here in Minnesota based on surveys of hunters and anglers, and I believe there was a legislative auditor report in the late 90s that found that increases in license fees don't pose a barrier to participation or haven't posed a barrier, and they weren't able to detect, at least in the past, reduced license sales after fees were increased here in Minnesota. What some of the eastern states are finding, though, is that the continued reliance on fees and the pressure, the upward pressure on fees to fund conservation programs has brought their fees to a point where it is starting to pose a barrier to participation. In fact, they're finding that they can't raise fees any further. If they raise the fees, they see participation rates drop to the extent that they actually bring in less revenue than they're bringing before they raise the fees up. And so we don't believe we're at that point here, but you're right. We don't want fees to be a barrier to participation, especially for young folks and families.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Senator Frederickson, for raising that. That's a very good point that we're going to have some discussion about. Can you just tell us how the fees that you were talking about, the East Coast fees that are too high, how they compare in dollar amounts to our fees, just roughly? Do you know those numbers offhand?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I don't have those numbers right offhand. We can get you that information. In fact, I believe it was New Hampshire most recently that found that. And I believe their fees are higher, and they've got a much smaller base of hunters and anglers in those eastern states too. So it's a smaller group of people that are supporting these same programs where we've got several million anglers, for example, here in Minnesota. So.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, maybe you could get that for us, if you would, just to give us some information about where the sort of the cutoff is that mm-hmm. we need to be thinking about for the future. Thank you.
Chair Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I may be reading this incorrectly again, but as I look at the beginning of our presentation today, we had a pie chart. Was that the current law? Slide 2.
Madam Chair, Senator Rebel, the $167.4 million
yeah.
on the total pie chart.
Then on page or slide 24, this is the governor's budget. Is that correct?
Yes.
What happened to there's no allocation for environment and natural resources in the current budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, the environment and natural resources piece that's there are the funds we receive from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund or the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. We have not received an appropriation they'll probably get some money for fish and wildlife out of the current proposal. So once that bill will be passed or that becomes law, you'll see, actually in the next biennium, you'll see two cycles of that commission because now they'll be on a yearly cycle. So you'll see, hopefully, if all goes well, more money in there than you see right now. But.
Mr. Chair, on that point, I think I'm pretty certain next Tuesday we're hearing the LCCMR bill, which I'm authoring. So we'll have some discussion and see which pieces there will affect the DNR budget.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Chad.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, at this point in time, I'd like to bring up Bob Tomlinson. Unfortunately, David Epperly, our Division of Forestry Director, is unable to be here today. He's at a meeting up in northern Minnesota dealing with forestry-related issues. So second best we have today. I'm not saying we're second best, Bob. Bob Tomlinson is pitch hitting is what I should say. For the Division of Forestry. And in front of you, you'll have the same presentation that says Division of Forestry on here. With that, I'm going to have Assistant Director Tomlinson just touch on the first couple of slides, and we'll move right to the change items, Mr. Chair, if that's okay with you.
Welcome, Mr. Tomlinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bob Tomlinson. I'm the Assistant Director of the Division of Forestry and DNR. Looking at slide number 2 in your package, which is the pie chart that we're all starting with that shows the total budget, and I'll kind of go over this quickly. I know we've had this chart up before you before, but it kind of helps set the stage, if you will, for the rest of the discussion today. The general fund is $67.4 million currently in the current biennium, 06 and 07. Of that, about $31.9 million of that general fund is fire. $17.5 million of that is from the open appropriation and $14.4 million from the direct. I would also suggest that We're not probably done drawing money out of the open because we still have to get through June 30th before the end of the fiscal year, and so that number likely will probably increase between now and then. The forest management account also, forest management program is also paid for out of that general fund to the tune of $35.4 million. And those things collectively, of course, amount to about 53% of our total budget during the 06-07 biennium. In special revenues, we're looking at bringing about $23.9 million of that, $8.7 million for the biennium, or four point such for the each year of the biennium is fire reimbursements from the feds for our time and our equipment and the likes that we spend on federal fires, such as the Cavity Lake fire, which you heard about in a previous hearing as well. Or if we send people out of state, or if our CL-215 planes go out of state and those sorts of things as well, then we're reimbursed for that. And those dollars are brought in through it, showed up there as a revenue source on us. In addition to that, there's a number of other things that make up the $23.9 million of special revenue, miscellaneous things such as timber revenues off of ConCon lands and State Forest Road account gas tax money and the likes like that, which are very numerous. And if at some point you wanted a list, I could probably provide that to you. The Natural Resource Fund, of course, is the one that we created back, I believe it was fiscal year 05. Went back when, at that time, the Division of Forestry is about 95% general funded, as you'll recall. And one of our objectives with establishing that account was to make the Division of Forestry less reliant on the general fund and a better balance between that and dedicated funding, which is pretty obvious that we've been able to accomplish that. But the forest management investment account is basically $20.8 million, which represents, in 06-07, they're about 16.4%. And a lot of the initiative ideas that Mr. Meyer is going to talk about in a few minutes, you'll see that number growing on the pie chart at the back of the presentation. And then we also bring in federal funding. About $11.7 million per year, per biennium, for things such as fire grants for local fire departments and the likes, and the FireWise program, working with communities out there on helping make their communities more fire safe, if you will, from wildfires, and training. A lot of fire training, those sorts of things like that, as well as in legacy program for the federal forest legacy program. That was $3.8 million for this biennium. We receive money for forest health, and we receive a little bit of money still for forest stewardship plan writing and technical assistance for private forest landowners from the federal government. We also, in addition, in 06-07, our LCMR, Environment and Natural Resources funding, was about $2.6 million, as it shows up there. And then Game and Fish, about $500,000 for the biennium, which has basically all gone into our development and implementation of the ecological classification system for the state. And that basically concludes where we're at currently in the 06-07 biennium in the pie chart there. If you go on to slide number 3, I'll just quickly go through these, but the core functions, and I think we've heard this a couple of different times, maybe at least, in there, but basically protecting from wildfire harm, managing about 4.5 million acres of state forest lands for different values, helping landowners and communities restore and improve their forests, producing tree seedlings from our state nurseries, and implementing the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. Slide 4 shows that, again, the fundamental outcome, as Mr. Myers mentioned several times, one of our highest priority, if not the highest priority in the department, is protecting people and property from wildfires, and I won't speak a lot to that, but it just kind of shows you some data on the number of fires over the last several years. And slide number 5 We'd like to make the point that a sustainably managed forest does provide multiple benefits. In our state forests, we do manage as multi-purpose lands. We use a diversity of management practices from harvesting to special management areas to achieve targets that include cords of timber offered, forest wildlife populations levels, forest habitat, wildlife habitat, hunter satisfaction levels, and a number of other things like that. And then I want to bring your attention, I guess, to slide 6, which is a new one that I don't think you've seen before. The three main points relative to this is that we have DNR policies and plans in place that help drive what we're trying to accomplish in the management of our state forest lands. And then we use a variety of tools, if you will, to implement the management directions conveyed through the DNR policy and plans, such as the ECS classifications and silvicultural guides, silviculture, including different harvesting methods and special management areas and monitoring, and thirdly, that the application of these tools to carry out the plans and policies results in providing a variety of multiple outcomes and values from our DNR forest lands. You want to jump right to...
Mr. Chair, members, the rest of the slides, before we get up to the legislative initiatives, discuss issues we've discussed, I think, in previous committees and also here, talking about changing land ownerships, sustainable managed forests for multiple values, multiple benefits, and also wildfire, and the role of private, non-industrial forest land, working with those landowners who don't own the land for timber, but own it for perhaps recreation or as an investment, helping them understand that the management needs or how they should be managing their land benefits them, but also benefits our wildlife and our conservation, water quality, and everything else out there that's so important. I just want to bring to your attention here one other slide before we get into that. Slide number 13. Mr. Tomlinson, I want to touch base on that real quick.
This is, again, is a new slide here, and it kind of sets the stage, if you will, for the rest of this discussion on the priority initiatives that Mr. Meyer's going to talk about. But basically, everything starts, we feel, with having good forest inventory information out there. It's a foundation for much of what we do. It's critical in providing our accurate representation of current conditions, of key trends and emerging threats and opportunities. The planning, which as you go around the loop there from the top center around to the right there, the planning, of course, includes subsection forest resource planning or other natural resource information, and it helps us set the stage for our operational planning. Those SFRMP plans are 10-year long types of plans, and of course the operational plans are going to be more annual types of work plan. The implementation, which of course is what much of the money goes for that we're over here asking you for, is for the site visits, the timber seals, all the planting and seeding, 30,000 acres plus of that per year, and all the forest improvement work, and then on up to monitoring and back around. We wanted to kind of present this because we felt that it helps depict, if you will, the cycle which we kind of follow through, and it helps also kind of set the stage for a number of initiative ideas that Mr. Meyer is going to talk about now.
Keeping this slide in mind, it'll help you understand where our money is going, where it's coming from, and the work we're doing. And all the budget change items in the forestry budget relate directly to this slide, which our main goal, our overall goal, is sustainable forest management. With that, moving on to slide 14, it outlines the legislative initiatives or the budget initiatives related to forestry, Division of Forestry, for the FY 08-09 budget. Forest management investment account investments in the DNR, forest management, which just sounds very duplicative, probably is, but page 28 of your budget book or in the fact sheet packets, it's page 21. Does everybody have a copy of the fact sheets with them? I have one other set if we need it.
Which fact sheet number?
Page 20, the forest management investment on page 21 outlines the funding, the change request from the forest management investment account, which is actually statute 89.039, which establishes account and the sources of the revenue. Timber sales receipts are transferred You can see the following revenue shall be deposited in the forest management investment account. Timber sales receipts transferred from the ConCon areas accounted as provided in section 84A.51, which is 50% of the timber receipts. Timber sale receipts from forest lands, acquired lands, and money transferred from the forest suspense account as established in accordance with 16A.125, which is the actual costs of our management of forestry-related issues on school trust lands. We certify to the forest suspense account. That money is transferred in the forest management investment account. The proceeds then go into the school trust or the permanent university trust funds based upon the land ownership, and also the interest from the investment in this account. The purposes of the account are for the reforestation and timber stand improvement, including forest pest management, timber sales administration, contract marking of commercial thinning sales, cultural resource reviews, and other timber sale contract or timber sales costs, and state forest road maintenance costs that exceed appropriations. So what we're looking at here with the forest management investment account is an appropriation for the biennium, $7.367 million per year. What we're asking for, the $3.167 million is to fully fund the costs related to, that I just mentioned, the purposes of the account that relate to forest activities for timber sales administration. This $3.167 million we're looking for out of the forest management investment account will replace that an equal amount of general fund that we're currently spending on these activities. And then that money is allowed us the opportunity to do the general fund budget reallocations we'll talk about, and we talked about in the divisions, but I'm also going to summarize in our budget kind of wrap-up here. So what we've done, if I haven't thoroughly confused everybody, as in our building blocks that we had, we started, if you think about a child playing with their blocks, we took all of our budget components from the base activity and built our budget up from there. In those blocks, we identified several areas that should have been coming from the forest management investment account. Direct operational costs related to timber sales management. So we're asking to fund those activities out of the forest management investment account, which is a dedicated fund for those activities. That gave us the opportunity to look at the monies that were being spent on those activities from the general fund and utilize that into our building block process. Without this shift, our budget would be $3 million less general fund, and the activities that we're reallocating those dollars to, we would not be able to do.
Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
But I don't want to get ahead of you, but if we continue to do that with the forest management investment account, I mean, are we going to exhaust that, or what are you seeing as a future for that?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have the fund statement right here in my book.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Meyer indicated our attempt is to just more fully attribute costs associated with those things that he mentioned, that the ones that are mentioned in law, the full cost of doing that business against the FMIA, rather than having it partially paid for against the general fund, which is what it's been the last couple of years, because we've had a cap, of course, on the amount of FMIA money that was appropriated to us in 06 and 07. So, to answer your question, there's enough money in the fund, in the forest management investment account, to allow for this switch, this change, if you will, of those items over to the forest management investment account, plus some doing additional items, which Mr. Meyer is going to mention in a few minutes here. The total increased expenditure that we're looking for out of FMIA is almost $7.4 million per year. This is $3.167 million of that $7.4 million per year.
Senator Ferris.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Tomlinson, is this a sustainable expenditure out of this fund, or will this run the fund down into deficit if it's sustained over two or three bienniums?
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson's a good question. We asked that ourselves several times. The fund balance statement right now, if you looked at it for fiscal year 08, shows about $26 million total coming into the fund in 06. Now, of course, you're hearing all kinds of concerns right now about the forest-based economy, of course, because all of this is based on revenues from timber sales. And so it's logical to ask the question, are the dollars going to be there to support that? We feel they are going to be there in 08 and 09. And the reason we feel that for 08 and 09 is because much of the timber that's currently being harvested is 01 timber sales, 02 timber sales, 03 timber sales. The problems that you're hearing about relative to higher price stumpages and real bid up values relates to very late 04 sales and much of 05 sales. That wood is not going to probably be harvested for several years, or for at least a couple of more years. So the other thing that I wanted to point out in here is that many of the new items that we're proposing to spend money on do not necessarily have tails going out beyond the end of the 09 biennium. Some of them do, but some of them don't. And so we're pretty careful about how much risk we're willing to take with this. Sticking our neck out and asking for dollars, especially when we're giving up that amount of general fund dollars in order to accomplish this. So we feel we've had economists look at the way we've done these projections and try to understand the methodology and how we're going about this. And they basically are suggesting to us that we're in pretty good shape and that they're pretty confident that we'll be able to live within our means and have the dollars there to support what we're asking for in the next biennium. And beyond that, there's nobody's betting on anything relative to it. But.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair,
go ahead, Senator Frederickson.
Members.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Commissioner, Director.
I'm sorry. Moving on from the $3.167 million expenditure, the next piece of this request is for $750,000 to add hire additional field foresters to work primarily on timber sales to help us increase our activities there. There's a $1 million component per year for forest improvement efforts, pre- and non-commercial thinning of the forest to make it more productive, make them more productive, and also seedling protection activities. $1.1 million per year for forest road maintenance. This is one of the one-time costs for the biennium to help us catch up with our required state forest road maintenance. And as you recall, it is an eligible cost, state forest road maintenance costs that exceed appropriations. We've been asking for bonding dollars to help us maintain and improve, upgrade our state forest road system for the past couple bonding cycles. And we've received some, but not enough to get us where we need to be. So these costs will help us. It's a one-time catch-up to get our infrastructure where it needs to be. The other piece, $600,000 to accelerate the implementation of our DNR ecological classification system. What this allows us to do is we go into the forest and examine by classification, taxonomic classification, the plants and trees that are there to make sure that we're planting the right types of trees that will grow that are best suited to those specific sites. Much as a farmer knows exactly what type of crop to plant on his ground, this is the type of information we're receiving from this data. What different varieties thrive and do best on those sites. So this information helps our forest become more productive in the future. Another piece, $350,000 to help us address the increasing threats and activities of invasive species on state-administered forest lands. Buckthorn, honeysickle, reed canary grass are issues we need to make sure we're maintaining on our state lands. That is a huge investment for the state. We need to make sure we're protecting them. And also $400,000 per year to accelerate the continual re-inventory of state-administered lands. We need to make sure we're analyzing and inventorying these stands on some kind of rotational cycle so we know what's out there, we're aware of what's growing, where the invasive species are. We need to accelerate that activity as well. Mr. Chair, members, are there any other questions regarding the Forest Management Investment Account initiative?
Commissioner, you mentioned that the road, the Forest Road maintenance was one time. Are all the rest of these ongoing?
Mr. Chair, members, I will have Assistant Director Tomlinson kind of touch base on which ones are and which ones aren't one-time dollars.
Mr. Chair, members, the FMIA investments in DNR Forest Management. Let's see I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong slide. Here we go. The full cost recovery of FMIA activities would be ongoing into the next. And we're looking at it, that being a change in our base, if you will. The additional timber seal foresters would be. That's where we're hiring 15 new additional foresters for that. The forest improvement efforts may not be. That is one of those ones that just depends on whether or not the fund's going to be there to support that in the future. Same thing with the State Forest Road maintenance. The ECS would be there for at least a couple of bienniums. Basically, we're working to try and get the native plant community inventories completed. Once we're done with that, then it becomes more operational. And then the invasive species on DNR forest lands, of course, is probably likely to be one that will be there for several bienniums to come. And the accelerating of the re-inventory work is as well one that would carry the tails in the future bienniums, because we're talking about basically that permanent change from the 15-year cycle down to the 10-year cycle on re-inventory effort. So,
thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, if there are no other questions, I'll move on to slide 20, talking about our general fund investments. I need to just step back for one quick second and talk about, again, the budget development process within the department, this time in relationship to the Governor's Task Force on Forestry Competitiveness. This task force was reconvened almost immediately after the closing of several mills in northern Minnesota, Ainsworth Mills, that make oriented strand board in the state, one of our main markets for aspen and other types of trees that we're harvesting. The recommendations from that task force were not available or agreed upon until after the governor's budget was well in development. Our budget was submitted to finance, in the fall, November, I think we were still finalizing it. The task force recommendations, I believe, came in early December. So some of the budget items in the DNR forestry budget came in after our budget proposal was submitted to the Department of Finance. So you'll see in the areas there's new general fund dollars coming in while we're redistributing, doing some general fund budget reallocations as well. This is due to the fact our budget was submitted and worked upon before the recommendations from the task force came out. Once those task force recommendations came, we compared what they recommended for funding for programs that they needed or what they recommended and where we were at. And some of the new general fund dollars are based upon those recommendations. Hopefully, Senator Saxon, we can review that report in the forestry subcommittee, one of the meetings that you have scheduled, if we could, or if you have time in the finance committee as well. It is a worthwhile document to talk about the work that they've done. So,
well, Commissioner, that'd be great because indeed it affects the whole budget, particularly because the governor followed many of the recommendations, which he probably should have.
I'll work with your staff to see if we can get that done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
The general fund investments in the DNR forest management are found on page 19 of our fact sheets. This represents $2 million, with $1.5 million of that being for non-industrial private forest landowner assistance. And as I mentioned, these are the people who own forested lands who may not be aware of how to manage it for its either conservation assets or timber assets to make sure you have a healthy, sustainable forest on your lands. So what we're trying to do, or what we want to do, is to add or support additional technical assistance and cost share assistance to these landowners. You can see on the fact sheet what we're talking about, trying to work with about 1 million acres of forest stewardship plans and get the people who own these lands into management objectives, and hopefully with the goal of being working with them to get their land certified. As we talk about forest certification, it is the ultimate goal because many end markets want, or they only purchase timber off of certified lands that are managed in a sustainable fashion. So that's a big part of that. And also $500,000 to deal with our land asset management demands. This may be a little bit different for those of you who don't have districts in the forestry community, but I work with Senator Saxog and Senator Bach and others who have constituents in the forested areas of the state who need access, who have land ownership, and we talk about the fragmentation of the forest. This is a direct impact of that. Somebody that buys a parcel of land inside of a state forest or someplace in a remote location, they want a road. They want to have a lease for a road. They want a gate on that road. It takes substantial staff time and resources for us to work with these landowners and for us to manage our land so that that access is achievable, but that's also done in a protective manner. Problem is once we put up a gate, then the next person calls us and tells us to take down the gate. So it's that constant staff work that takes place in our regional offices that this will fund, working with our land swaps and dispersed ownership issues. We need to put more money into those activities or fund those activities more fully to make sure where we are providing access or dealing with those issues, we're dealing with them in a responsive time. You know, people have certain expectations, as we all know. We want to make sure we're meeting those expectations, but also doing so in a manner that protects the forest as a resource as well. So it does represents a substantial amount of time.
Commissioner, back to the non-industrial private forest. When we do this work, which I agree is very important, are we contemplating collecting any fees or anything for doing this? Or
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, our current policy is that we do collect fees for those activities where there would be an immediate financial return to the landowner, such as a timber sale. Although I would also suggest to you that we emphasize that we'd prefer not to have our foresters doing timber sale work if there are consulting foresters or other industry foresters or others out there available to do that work for the landowners. We prefer to have our folks focused into those types of activities where there's not immediate revenue enhancing things, like, for example, providing them the technical assistance for planting trees and the site prep that would have to go into that and the protection of the trees and those sorts of things like that following a harvest. So.
Thank you.
Members, if you go to slide 21, you've probably already looked at that. It kind of just shows our targets. Complete 65,000 acres, four stewardship plans in 07. We're working on that currently. 08, complete 150,000 acres with a long-term goal, as I discussed a little bit, of 2.3 million acres of private forest stewardship plans. And just simply, as we touched upon, more stewardship plans mean more multiple benefits, increased timber supply, increased economic return to the landowner and community, improved wildlife habitat, and also enhanced water quality. As they become certified, they have to make sure they're managing those riparian areas of the forest in accordance with law and best management practices. Slide 22 just talks about what we've already briefly talked about, the land asset management demands. Boundary issues and disputes are something we spend a lot of time on, not only in forested areas of the state, but anywhere parks, in particular with parks, as people want to live next to a park or a wildlife management area. It provides them with an increased property value. Nobody's going to be moving in behind them. It's a boundary issue. We had a person built a swimming pool on state park property. We had to deal with that. Some of the things you'll hear in the lands bill, the omnibus lands bill, talk about trespass issues that we need to fund and work on those activities. Moving on to slide 23, SFRA, Sustainable Forest Resource Act. I think the Division of Forestry has more acronyms probably than most, but this is going to be, it's also in our DNR forestry bill. The chapter of the Sustainable Forest Resources Act is set to be repealed. The sunset provision in this act is this year. We want to remove that repealer because this piece of legislation, we feel, is vital to the continual sustainable management of our forests. And part of that funds the Forest Management Resource Council. I know they've presented in front of the policy committee before. This is a group of, it's a council housed in the University of Minnesota, made up of a large number of individuals that oversee our forest management activities and provide recommendations to the department and also the legislature. So that's $780,000 per year to fund those activities. $200,000 one-time appropriation of this money would be to complete a study and make recommendations to the legislature for addressing the fragmentation and parcelization of large blocks of private forest land, working directly with some of the concerns Senator Saxog and others have. And also $200,000 one-time appropriation of these funds for funding to the Forest Research Advisory Committee to provide direction on research topics recommended by the Governor's Task Force on Competitiveness of Minnesota's Forest Industry. Those two come directly out of some of the recommendations that the task force had. Mr. Chair, members, we can talk about the final summary slide if there aren't any other questions on those appropriations or those proposals, if you wish.
Any questions? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Members, slide 24 shows where we want to go, what the governor's proposal looks like kind of in a simple pie chart format. You can see if you compare to slide 2, current biennium, $127 million total appropriations for the Division of Forestry. 08-09, we're seeking $137.5 million. We're kind of shifting as well. If you look at it, right now, we're at 53% general fund. We're moving to 50% general fund. And as Director Tomlinson said, one of the challenges that we have in the Division of Forestry is that it's heavily general fund funded. If you go back, and I'm going to try to prepare this, I think it would be interesting for the committee to see how in the past 5 years we've gone or tried to develop sources of funding for divisions that are reliant on general fund to give them some protection from the increasing demands the general fund has upon it with health care, transportation, education. We all know the environment takes a large portion of the budget, but those other issues take up a lot larger portion. And the pressures we see are critical. We need to continue our work and make sure that the funding's there. So we've, with your support and help, have been able to develop programs to fund these programs based upon activities. Forest Management Investment Account is one example. So you can see we're slowly making a little progress there. Natural Resources Account, $37.3 million. Real small piece of game of fish fund dollars. Special revenue, $22.5 million, and $74,000 from other funds. So they all come from general fund or other statutory direct appropriations, I should say. The final page of your presentation is just a table talking about the initiatives that we're seeking this biennium. The FMIA investments, general fund investments in forest management, Sustainable Forest Resource Act reauthorization and implementation, our operations support funding, which we'll cover more in detail when we get to the operations support part of the budget. The DNR budget reallocation, this $5,334,000, represents the land record management costs as well as the general fund costs that were talked about. Compensation adjustment, we'll talk about this in more detail at kind of the division or the management budget services level, op support. We were able to secure a 2% general fund increase for compensation, and we're seeking out of all of our dedicated accounts a 3.25% compensation amount to deal with the contract negotiations and the cost of doing business, maintaining our staff. We call it maintenance of service. These are the funds that we need to deal with the increasing costs of having people do the work that we do on a day-to-day basis. Salaries, insurance, workers' comp, Social Security, all of those payroll benefit type issues we call maintenance of service. Without those appropriations, we will have to reduce our services to maintain those levels of funding. Firewood sales limitations. We talked about the bill, the firewood ban bill, a little bit, but there is a $55,000 per year appropriation attached to that proposal, helping us control the movement of firewood throughout the state. Most of that goes for the education of our users of the state forests and the state parks, making sure that they're aware that they cannot bring firewood in there, where they can get firewood that will be approved, and also disposing of the firewood that comes in. in an environmentally secure manner. All-terrain vehicle gas tax, it's a bill that you will have before you in this committee and also in the transportation finance. Some of those funds will be used for county and state forest roads. That will be a change item in this budget. The forest resource assessment is zero what we're doing there. It's in a policy bill, but you'll see that in front of you. It's capturing our funds from these activities and putting them into a forest resource assessment account, making maps and digital maps and photos for people. The funds go into two separate accounts right now. We're creating a fund for those dollars. Balsam bow buyers, all of your Christmas wreaths come from somewhere, and it's from the people who trim the balsams, of the boughs off the balsams. This is an actual $250 budget change item that deals with a policy shift. We want to make sure that people are educated, receive some base-level education before they go out and trim our balsam trees for the making of these things, the ornamental decorations. What we're trying to do, again, is Senator Bach had mentioned, capture our costs. We're trying to adjust that permit to fully capture the cost of doing business, not overcharge or undercharge, as 16A requires us to do. And then the forest land use account, this is an account, this is a program that was established last biennium, but we did not establish the count for the dollars to go into. $30,000 a year, roughly, for people having doing uses in our forest, such as dog sled races, other types of races, camping, geocaching activities, perhaps. People who come to us and say, we want to use the forest for this activity. We work with them, give them a permit. They pay us to cost of outhouses, road maintenance, things of that nature. We need to put those funds into an account that we can access to. That represents all of the change items related to the Division of Forestry.
You did very well.
I know I'm a little bit early, but I don't want to start a new division, so it's not that I'm filibustering or anything. I want to go through everything in detail.
Commissioner, I just point back to page 29 of our books, and the last paragraph is relationship to base budget, and note that we are making a bit of a change this year and using more FMIA funds for the forestry budget. And personally, I think that's healthy, using the forest assets that good management, good sustainable management have gleaned, and I think we do have good forests. And you're also adding foresters, which, again, if you're going to have a healthy forest, you got to have foresters managing. So, I'm not. This is a little bit of a leap of faith. There's no question about it. It needs to be sustained by our forests. But I think, as with game and fish, where the licenses are used to finance that particular section, that our timber production should be more related to what we do here. So. But it's important to understand that, I think, that it's a 70% increase.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
On that point, you know, what's the magic formula here? I mean, you're asking for lots and lots of general fund for forestry as well. And what made you decide not to put more of that expenditure into the FMIA? I mean, how did you arrive at this amount as what was appropriate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think there's a couple of things that we thought long and hard about. One was, first off, what are our needs? And we looked at, essentially, what do we need to do more of or differently and or better job of? And I think that the items that Mr. Meyer mentioned to you reflect that. Those are the needs that we felt are really the most pronounced at this point in time, such as the non-industrial private forest land management. We've really reduced that over the last couple of bienniums due to general fund reductions and the fact that more and more people are moving out and we need to have the land asset management, more and more time put into driveway easements and appraisals and surveys and those sorts of things. But then in addition to that, we also are very concerned about, in addition to looking at the needs, Senator Anderson, looking at what it is that we felt the fund could sustain reasonably well in the end of the next biennium. And we're, as I pointed out earlier there, we're fairly confident based on our projections of timber revenues of the timber that's being harvested now and being brought to the mill, even in light of some of the other things going on within the forest products industry, that there is still going to be enough there to help us support that level of funding. Beyond that, we're uncertain. We're just uncertain whether or not there's going to be additional dollars for additional things, and that's why I think you see the funding request. Even though the fund statement might show more dollars available than that, we're not certain that the funding will actually be there with the current economy the way it is in the forest products industry in the long term. So I hope that helps to answer your question.
It's clear as mud,
Well, I think
judgment call is what it is. I guess. I mean, your best guess. It sounds like you guys are in a better position to guess than I am.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, and thanks for asking it. I mean, it is a best guess, and we probably aren't a better. And actually, the economist folks, that forest economists that we asked to kind of look at this, that are in even a better position to guess relative to that and what the likelihood of things are going to be and the way we're projecting it. So, again, we're fairly confident where we're at right now, but we'd be hesitant to ask for more and less general fund and then have to be back here 2 years from now giving another budget presentation where we don't have enough FMIA there to establish the base and ask it for general fund dollars to compensate for that. So,
I'm sorry, maybe one more question. We have three more minutes. Let me make sure I understand how much base funding is coming out of the FMIA, out of the base, before you get to these new initiatives. Maybe you said that before, but how much are you already spending for your general operation?
Now, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, our current level of spending out of the FMIA is $10.3 million. That's the amount that you appropriated at the beginning of the 06-07. Biennium.
That's right. That's where we get the 70%. Thank you.
Senator Figgs. Well, any other questions?
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to say thank you to all members for bearing with us. We will get through this tomorrow. Hopefully we won't take the whole committee time. What we have before us left to complete the Division of Waters, our Office of Management, Budget Services, Operations Support, and then just a brief agency wrap-up. So I'm confident we will finish tomorrow, and I just want to say thank you in advance for the time the committee has given us.
Thank you, Commissioner and Director. Chairman Anderson, do you have an announcement?
Just to remind members, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, we really want you to be here, and we'll try to get you on the road and home as soon as possible.
So this meeting's adjourned until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Thank you.